A new episode of the Greg Hughes podcast is coming your way in just a moment. But before we get into today's show, we've some fantastic news to share. We're officially shortlisted for the podcast of the year at the IMRO Radio Awards. A huge thank you to everyone who tunes in, shares and supports the podcast. If you have a story, a guest suggestion, or want to get in touch with the team, you can reach out directly to our researcher and producer, Caroline Orr, by emailing carolineorr@highlandradio.com. All right, I am delighted to welcome onto the podcast comedian Paddy O'Donnell. Paddy, good morning to you. Good afternoon. How are you keeping?
I'm good. We'll change the audio, Mac, and we'll be all right.
Come here. You're back in the Northwest very, very soon. Talk to me about that first and foremost.
I love coming to Donegal. Donegal is my favourite county. And I've always been going to the Gaeltacht there every year when I was a kid, like teenager. And you just love the whole time you're up there. And then once I started doing comedy, it was like, let's get to Donegal and try and do a bit of comedy. And we started off in a few places like Narran and Port New, and we done just comedy nights there. And then we developed on until then a couple of years ago, started going up to do my own shows, and we went to the Ungrannan Theatre. And it's just built up every year. And this year here, we just finished off doing, I think it was June or May, and we sold the place out, and the Donegal crowd are just up for the crack, and I just love going up and doing it. And even when you're up and about Donegal, just people stabbing you who recognise you, and you sort of go, do they really get me up here, or like, do they see the stuff? And they must do, they must be on, and they know the crack, and I just love it. Just love it.
But I mean, really, it's not surprising, because there are, I mean, listen, we're all on one island, but there are particular strong connections between Donegal and the north, obviously, geographically. But in terms of sort of, you know, cross-border travel and holidaying here and there and everywhere, the same as there are, you know, with Donegal and Scotland.
Yeah, completely. And I remember, like, going to Donegal, you would have had people staying in houses and stuff beside you, and they would have been from Scotland, but their family were from Donegal, and they had travelled and went out of work, you know, years ago, and there's that connection. So I think, you're right. That whole Gaelic sort of right across from Donegal, going right over into Glasgow and Edinburgh and places like that, you have the Irish connection. But yeah, no, it's great. I think just because I associate Donegal with a quieter life, and sometimes you forget that, you know, you just have internet up there.
We have the lotto too, you know.
Of course you get it, you know. But I think it's just dipping your toe in. Sort of when you go to cities and stuff, you don't really worry that much. But I think when you go to more country places like that, you sort of worry, do they get the humour? But at the end of the day, I'm talking about being married and being a daddy and, you know, working. And they're all things that people do in the country as well. So that's where it relates.
Yeah. And, you know, the cultural idiosyncrasies are all the same too in our part of the island and urban, rural. You're obviously originally from West Belfast. Proud to be from West Belfast.
Yeah, completely. Grew up in West Belfast. Apart from moving away and living part of my time in the States and then coming back again, I've always lived in West Belfast. And it's like an education, I tell people, growing up here, because it sets you up for anywhere in the world. You know, we grew up at the time. I was at the tail end of what we call the Troubles, and you know, you had the army on the streets and it was a bit rough and it wasn't your normal upbringing, and you didn't really see any of that until you did go to Donegal for the summer, and you could just, you know, you were living in a different world. And I think that's what's magical about Donegal for me. I think when I go across into Donegal, I take a big deep breath and I'm like, here I am. And it's not even just the beauty of the land, it's just more relaxed, you know. And I think where I grew up wasn't that relaxed, and I think that's where I connected to. But yeah, as I say, West Belfast and growing up in it, you can go anywhere in the world. Like, you don't have that fear factor, and you can just go anywhere and seek out things and meet people, and it's just great.
Yeah, of course. And even in your lifetime, as you say, you know, the tail end of the Troubles and what have you, culminating in the huge events we saw in Belfast this year. I mean, there's been a great deal of progress. Do you see Belfast in a different light, you know, from being, because you're, it's funny, some of your observations of Donegal, I get it, but it's not necessarily the Donegal that I see, if that makes sense. And I mean that with absolute respect. And yet maybe I have some sort of a preconceived notion of what Belfast was. And because it's hosted hundreds of thousands of people over the last couple of months, it's something completely different now.
Yeah, I mean, I've always known what Belfast has, and you know, the thing about Belfast is the people. And although we're divided, in a sense, we're a very nice city, and it's very helpful. And I think this thing, when you go anywhere, you go somewhere and experience a place and you think it's great, and the people that live there maybe don't have the same views because they live there, and maybe, you know, and that, and people say that everywhere you go, no, it's not, it's crap here. And you're going, snap, it's really, really good. But I think Belfast, especially during the summer there and the FLA being there, it showed what it can be. And it showed people how normal life could be in Belfast, and that we can pull off these big events and people can come there and feel safe and just have a good time. And, you know, maybe people that's never been to Belfast before went to the FLA. If they come in a different month, it mightn't be the same experience for them, but it is still the same place. So I get what you mean about Donegal, because there's people I know from Donegal and they go, I just don't get the same feeling you get. Yeah. And I go, because you grew up here, you know, you maybe have to go to Belfast for a weekend to get that feeling away from where you normally live and your normal daily routine. And I speak about buying a house in Donegal and moving there, and like I say to my kids, and they're like, yes, the Gael tax's great for 3 weeks, Dad, when we go up, but if we lived up there, it's not going to be the Gael tax. It's going to just be home, a remote house out there. I went, I know, but it's, I think what I see in Donegal and what my kids see in Donegal and what they would want like the Gael tax sort of experience, and, you know, not having their parents around and living in a stranger's house and experiencing that whole life of just being away from parents for 3 weeks. I think that's what the Gael tax is about. But I sort of just see Donegal and the beauty in it and the unspoiled beaches, and, you know, and the people are so friendly too. And it's funny, you're done with DNA and 5% came up as like Donegal, you know, and you were going, what do you mean that 5%? And then I looked into it. So a big part and portion of the family back, you know, 100 years were from Donegal. So hear me, well, that explains it. It has to be in your DNA for you to want to go back to your roots, you know.
Yeah,
so,
indeed. And that was a big council, Donegal County Council logo. It's in your DNA. But I think just before moving on, what I like about Donegal, and you could reassure your children of this, is that, and you would know this yourself, like you go to the Gaeltacht, it's one experience. You go to Inishowen, it's another. You go to Letterkenny and they think it's San Francisco there. You go to the east and the south, you know, within the, that don't even mention the islands, within the county, you can get almost a different experience dependent on where you go.
Completely. And you're 100% right. Like, we would go to, not even just when we go to Donegal, we don't go to just one part. We tend to go around different places, and there's that different experience everywhere you go, as you say, you know, from the top to the bottom. And I just love Donegal about that. I love being up sort of around Dunfanaghy, you know, Dunloe and Downings. They're all the places that I tend to hang around when I go up. But at the same sense, I've had great times in, you know, Donegal Town and, you know, different experiences, Letterkenny. So I just love it. It's a big, big county, and it has a lot to offer that way, you know. Come apart here from the houses, but we're not going there.
Yeah, not today. Well, it's up to you if you wish to. At what stage do you twig that you are funny? Because I think being a comedian or anything, it reminds me sometimes a little bit like, you know, back in the day when you could have a laugh at someone on The X Factor and you'd have people who believed they could sing, but they couldn't, and they became part of the entertainment. And, you know, everyone thinks they have a book in them, and perhaps there's lots of people think they're funny. But how do you realise that you actually are, and that this is something you can actually get up on to the stage and do?
Well, I mean, it's strange for me because I always have been funny, because if you hear stories about me, whether it be the first time that I done an Irish dancing fish and I got up on the stage and made everybody laugh instead of making them, you know, love my lovely dancing shoes that I had on. But I've always had that ability to stand up and make people laugh. And it wasn't the career that I chose. I didn't think about being a stand-up comedian. I actually fell into it after a traumatic event, and my wife just trying to get my mind off it. I was going through mental health issues, and she brought me to a comedy night just to try and take my mind off it. And I got called up on the stage, and it was basically by accident. People go, "Well, you're not scared when he called you out." And when he called me out at that time, like being in the dark place that I was in, the thought of getting up on the stage to other people would have been insane. But when I got up and done it, it was like therapy. I'd never experienced doing it on that level, which was on a stage. And it wasn't a big level. I mean, there was 40 people in the room, but it was a proper comedy night. And I'd never put myself forward for it, never thought about doing comedy. It was always a class clown. And then when I'd done it, it was just like, you know, one of them moments that you have in your life where you just experience something that's just the most amazing thing you've ever done. And I was like, I need to do this again. And it was like being hooked on a substance, you know. I was like, I need to do that all the time. And I drove all over Ireland for maybe the first 6-7 months of doing comedy just to get 10 minutes. I had a drove to Kerry, or I would have drove to the bottom of Wexford or Donegal just to get 10 minutes. And it was just to get the fix. And I'm just lucky now that it's my career and I've just fell into it. So I don't think there was an actual moment where I went, oh, I'm actually funny. I always thought I was funny. And I think most people who have funny bones do think they're funny, but I never thought of a career. And I think it was just going down the wrong way. And just my path was, I was meant to do this. So I ended up in it. And
fantastic.
That's, here I am now, you know. And I'm very lucky because not a lot of people end up doing something that they love or they should be doing, you know, and life has that way of stopping you sometimes, you know.
Yeah,
and
very lucky. What part of that initial performance hooked you? Was it the buzz of the fight, the fight or flight, putting yourself there on the edge of the stage? Was it the lights? Was it the feedback from the audience? Like, what part of that is the bit that caught you?
Not to take away from the other acts, it was an open mic thing, right? So it was a lot of people who were just starting out, but they were all struggling. And I was sort of going, they're showing their fear and they were struggling to get their point across, if you know what I mean. And I remember sitting in the audience, and when I was called up, I was like, well, just don't let that get in the way of telling the story here. And I went up and done it as if I was telling the story, as if it was me and you talking now. So I wasn't trying to be funny. I was just trying to tell a story about life that day and something that happened that day that I found humor in. And funny enough for me and lucky enough for me, the audience bust out laughing. And it was obviously something that they'd never thought about before, but they were able to picture the event and then they laughed at it. And the buzz I got from that was like, oh, right, so that worked. What about this? And then I threw something else out and I got the laugh back. And once I got like 4 or 5 laughs in a row, I was like, okay, this is amazing. You know, and I think that's the bit that got me hooked, is let's make these things laugh. If you can make people laugh and they laugh back at you, that's the buzz. And don't get me wrong, not every gig you got the laugh, and there's been a lot of, you know, making the craft better over the years, but which is easier to do now. But even last night, I've done a formal event, and formals and weddings are completely different. And I try and explain this to up-and-coming comedians when they ask me about it. When you do a formal or you do a wedding, the people haven't bought a ticket to come and see you, so you're not guaranteed the laughs. And as long as you know that in your head, and all you do is do the job that you're meant to do and just be funny, you'll be grand, you'll get by. But some comedians would go into a situation like that and then it doesn't work out for them because it's not a comedy format, it's not a comedy club, and then they struggle, and then that's when it comes across. So it's not as easy as everybody makes it out to be, but to me it's just a job now, so I'm just that experienced in it and I find it easy. But getting here, you know, was tough for the first year, but I loved doing it and I loved the ride of it.
Yeah, it's interesting, and you're right too. I think an audience has to have invested something, even if it's their time. In other words, they've left the house and they've gone specifically to see you. You know, we're not very good at getting things for free or getting spoiled, are we? You talked about coming out of a dark place, and I'm not going to delve into that on you, but just like, how bad was it for you, or what took you there, and why do you think it was comedy that got you out?
Basically, I had part of my finger bitten off working as a doorman. And at the time, I had a joinery business going. I had a few men working for me. And, I was doing quite well. It was quite successful for a young man in his 20s to have his own business. And I just got married. I had a young son at 9 months old. And this finger came and it stopped me from functioning. And it was a man that I knew that done it, a school teacher that I knew. And it sort of affected me in a way where, like, I couldn't believe he'd done it for a start. And then I didn't know how to deal with it. I lost a third of the grip of my hand. I had to change how I cut with a saw, how I worked, how I done things on a daily basis in it. At the time, I put myself into the dark place because I couldn't believe that something like that would happen in the world. The world was going too nice for me. Everything was going too well. And then, boom, I had this blip. And I let it affect me more than I should have. But, I mean, the mind works in a mysterious way. And I just went into it. And people were trying everything to try and bring me out of myself. And it wasn't working. I was feeling sorry for myself. I was just putting myself in that place. Mm. And then the comedy came and it hit me like a thunderbolt. And I think that's the thing with Irish people. I think genuinely do, because a lot of people around the world love Irish comedy and they love Irish comedians. And I think it's just storytelling, and it's what we've been through as a nation, and we always come out the other end. And I think it's that darkness and trying to find comedy and darkness and trying to find a light to get out of it is a thing that makes us who we are, and it makes us a great nation. And I just think that the comedy, that's why it saved me. I was like, wait, let's take this bad part of your life and let's try and make light of it. And I now look at it as it was a blip. It was just I was going in the wrong direction and this took me in the right direction. And, I'm just happy that I'm not happy that it happened, but I'm happy that my life is where it is now compared to where it was going, because the Celtic Tiger and all would have died and I would have enjoyed my business and I might end up losing the business anyway. So it's just one of them ones. But I just think as Irish people, we're just able to laugh at ourselves and able to laugh. And we're not sick. It's just that if you just look at the traditional Irish wake, and we're all sitting there laughing and having a good time thinking about the person that's passed. It's a hard time, but at the same sense, we always try and find humour in it. Yeah. And I think that's who we are.
It's interesting in that the two interesting triggers into and out of, and it's a horrible situation before we move on. It's a horrible situation when people don't understand why you feel bad. When people should say, geez, you've got everything, you've got a family, you've got a new baby, how come you're not jumping for joy? And it's a juxtaposition. It's hard to explain, but it's only when you come out of that and you can enjoy that, it makes a little bit of sense. And you can understand why people can't understand that.
Yeah, no, I mean, completely. And it's hard for the experience. And I think it's a thing with men as well, especially. And I think we're getting better at it, but men don't talk. And you would have been that old, especially when I played in hurling teams and boxing clubs and whatever, and they would have been like, just get on with it, get up and get on with it, And it's maybe not that. I think people need to talk. I think you need to say how you feel, because that's the first part of getting past the hurt. It's saying, right, okay, this is how I'm feeling right now and this is why I'm feeling like this. And that's why comedy was the thing that worked for me, and it might work for somebody else. It might be the worst thing in the world to put somebody that has mental health issues up on the stage. But what I mean is it's a lot of people contact me now, even from podcast clips or like some of the stuff I have online, and they would say, you've no idea how that got me through a bad period of time. And it's just great to hear that, So there's stuff that works for everybody. And I try and tell them, try and think of a good time. Try and think of something that makes you feel better at that time, and do that. And I'm not, any way trained, but I can only go from my experience. And I can just say that it saved my life. So, there's stuff out there for everybody to try and do.
But listen, it's not unlike your comedy. That's relatable. That's normal. I mean? It's not, you're not... a 6'8" strapping rugby player who's got a book to publish, and no disrespect to them either. I don't want to cast any shade, but my point is that you're a normal person and your story is normal and it's relatable. And as you say, you're showing that you can speak out about it. 2011 then. So that first performance that changed things around, is that the start? Is that it 2011, or does the sort of, your career in stand-up comedy come after that? I'm just trying to get the timelines here.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong, you don't walk onto an open mic stage and then it's just, success straight away. I mean, we had a lot of ups and downs and a lot of good years, a lot of bad years, and you're trying to carve out a career. And it was actually COVID was like I was selling maybe 120 tickets to a solo show of mine in Belfast once a year. And then you were doing comedy nights and you were just on the bill and people would come up after you and go, "Oh, that was amazing. What's your name again? I have to look out for you." And I remember COVID hit and the gig stopped. And I never would take a job as a carpenter in the movie sets in Belfast because at nighttime you had to stay on. And my wife was like, "You're not taking a job down there, it's good money." And I was like, "No, because then I can't do my gigs at night." And she was always frustrated with that. She was always like, "What do you mean? You're not guaranteed your gigs." And I'm going, "No, but they're there and I want to do it. It's like a hobby as well, And I took a job in the movie sets because with no gigs. And overnight, people being in their houses or, being online more because of what was happening, I had a clip that had 348 views. I can remember that. It was sitting there for 3 years, 348 views. And overnight, it went to 1.1 million.
Wow. Went viral
And
just.
I went, what's made the difference? And it's ironic that I kept saying to my wife, "No, I have to keep gigging because you never know who's going to turn up and see you. You never know who's going to be there in the industry. This is what you need to do." And it wasn't until my gig stopped that she was like, "Well, are you going to go back to comedy if it ever comes back?" And I went, "I don't know." And I had took that job and I had stopped gigging and then my career took off. And it was like when everything opened, one of the big promotion companies in Ireland obviously came to me and they were like, "We have emails." Like people ask them, "Where are you going to be live?" And there was thousands of emails and they were like, "So we want to bring you onto the books." And we put on a 400 seat show in Belfast and it went on sale. It sold out in 5 minutes and we went up to seven of those. And then they went, "We're going to stop at that." And I was like, "Right, that's okay. I'm happy to stop at that." And they were like, "No, but we're going to try it bigger, the Ulster Hall." And they put on the Ulster Hall and we sold two of those. And then they moved to the Waterfront Hall. And then when I'd done the Waterfront Hall, I'd done two in a row and they were like, "We're going to move you to the arena next year." And I mean, that's literally how it came about. So it's all them years. And I think comedians used to have to go to Edinburgh, get noticed, get on TV. Whereas now you don't have to do that because you have a social media platform, and people can get to see you. And it's completely changed. That's why like Live at the Apollo has stopped and all those sort of TV game shows have stopped because it's not needed anymore for
But is
comedians to
that
be
not
like
a
that.
good thing? Because I think I've spoken to other comedians and sometimes there can be a click, and it's who you know and how you get on a bill and where you position that bill and what kind of promotion you get, and you end up then in that industry with a few people that are incredibly influential, and you feel you have to move out of Belfast because you have to be in Dublin or you have to go up and do the Fringe or whatever in Scotland. So it's good, isn't it, to some extent? I'll tell you, there's people sitting back going, well, thank God that's been broken, because now people can, they can make their own way and they're not hitting glass ceilings because they're not in the know.
Yeah, no, completely. I mean, I have to agree with that because it's helped me. I mean, it's how I've went about. Traditionally, I think it would have been very hard for me to be somebody who comes from, a Republican area of West Belfast to break into the scene. Now, in the past 2 years, artists from my part of the world are like at the forefront of everything. You have Anto Boyle, Lola Pettigrew, who amazing actors who are out there doing big things in Hollywood and Netflix and all those big things. And then you have Kneecap, a local band who have went through the roof, and it's very proud that that happens. But apart from that, without the social media presence that I had and people sitting there watching that and the podcast clips and the stuff like that, I wouldn't be where I am in terms of selling tickets. So I agree. I think it's fantastic that an artist can literally be in their house and go out there and reach
Well,
thousands
you
of
used one
people.
example as Kneecap. Can you imagine if the establishment had its way, where they would be? And
Oh,
I don't mean because they're political, that side of things. I'm actually on about, calling out, international global issues or whatever. If they weren't able to build, and that all started in the Gaeltacht too, of course. So we're taking credit for that as well as you. But my point being is, if they weren't able to reach their audience, if they were relying on radio airplay per se, or, you know, TV exposure, they would never have happened. They would have been suppressed into nothingness.
100%. 100%. And it's that sort of, you know, kids getting to see it. I had one of them moments when they capped a couple of years ago at Electric Picnic. I think it was 2 years ago, because I would have known Nisha Mowgli Bap. I knew his father quite well, a massive Irish language activist in Belfast. I mean, probably the biggest I ever knew of. I remember him in the 80s standing outside the BBC fighting to try and get airtime, you know. And I was down at Electric Picnic and I was on stage, and the comedy tent was rammed, and I remember going, what's going on here? Like, it's rammed. And Kneecap were playing right after me. So everyone that was going to Kneecap just came into the comedy tent. And, you know, obviously from being West Belfast, it was a big thing. So we left the tent and went in, and I'm watching all the young ones from around Ireland, who Irish was a thing that you were made to do in school. And there they all were singing in it. And I was like, Kneecap's made Irish cool here again. You know, it's really like, it's making it cool with the kids. And I had one of them moments where I was just like, that is amazing, like, to see what they've done. And yeah, they wouldn't have done any of it if they hadn't had that social media, you know, presence of like going against the establishment and the young ones. You know, it's sort of like the punk movements back in the 80s and the 70s and stuff like that. You know, you had people, young ones want to rebel and they want to, yeah, go up against the establishment. And I think Kneecap came at the right time, you know.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
Fantastic to see.
Exactly. You know? And you were also able to bypass, or any of the artists you mentioned, able to bypass, you know, if someone doesn't like you, you know what, stuff for you, I'll fill out the SSC myself. Obviously, a lot of your early material would have drawn on your experience, you know, as a doorman, as a taxi driver, and what have you. But obviously, you're evolving as a person, and your material has to evolve. So, you know, where do you continue to draw the inspiration from now that you're a posh boy? No, but you know what I mean. Now that you're, do you know, like you know, now that your life is different now.
It is, but do you know, you try and keep yourself true to who you are.
Of course, grounded. Yeah,
you do, and I do live in West Belfast. I live on the mountain. I look down on West Belfast, but I still live in West Belfast. You know, and funny, somebody made a comment a couple of weeks ago and was like, you're working class driving about in a big flashy motor. Do you know what I mean? So sometimes you have to think about things like your decisions and choices, but I don't think I'll change that much. I'm very much, you know, a West Belfast boy, and I'm working class, and I still have all them thoughts and whatever. And I have seen it with other acts where, you know, their material did change over the years, because then they started associating themselves with, you know, people that they wouldn't have been with in prior years. And you can see that in their material. I sort of try and just associate myself with people who I have always associated myself with, you know, and not let it get above my station. At the end of the day, I'm just an ordinary guy. And people come up and meet you and they're like, well, you know, and I'm like, I'm just always come up and say hello. I'm just an ordinary fella, you know. It's the fact that I tell jokes on stage is no different, you know.
Yeah, and I think too, the great thing about us Irish, or the Irish generally, is that, you know, I do believe that we do support those that do well, but also we keep them grounded. Right. Yeah. You know, like, yeah. So in other words, you remember where you're from. You don't get above your station because you know where you're from. And you know that if you started acting above your station, you know, the guys and the girls that wouldn't be long putting you back in your box. Often it'd be an auntie or your mother or your dad or whoever it might be. But it's the lads that, you know, that your mates, they're not going to let you run away with yourself.
Yeah. I mean, I'm under no illusion. I'm still the same person. I don't think it has changed me that much. I genuinely don't. I still have all the same issues that other people have, you know. Funny, I got sick last week and I had to go to the NE, and four or five people were like, can you not make a phone call here, like, to get yourself in there? And I was like, even if I could make a phone call, I wouldn't do it, because I would never live that down, you know. Like, it's just not in me to do that. I wouldn't make a phone call to say, here, do you know who I am? I literally sat there for 14 hours like everybody else, and that's just who I am. At the end of the day, and I think once you're not true to yourself, then you're going to lose your presence. And I think that's what people invest in me, because they know that I'm just a normal fella that just has this, and it's just what I do in my job that just makes me known a wee bit more. It doesn't mean that I'm any better or any, you know, than anybody else. And I'm all for equality and stuff. So it's, I don't know, it's a wee thing in me that I'm always about, you know, supporting people no matter who they are, what they are, as long as they're nice to you, you're nice to them.
Yeah.
And I'll never change.
No, of course not. And that's why you're so relatable, of course. I mean, through your own endeavours, of course, you're going to end up sharing stages outside of your own solo shows. I mean, Frankie Boyle, Jason Manford, Andrew Maxwell, Patrick Kielce, the list goes on and on and on. What's it like when you're on before or after other comedians? You know, maybe the one before you's had an absolute S show, or maybe you've the pressure of finishing off a show or what have you. Do you prefer having your own solo shows, or do you like being part of a show with more people on it?
I think a show with more people on it, which I love doing because it gives a bit of variety for people. What I don't like about that is you get maybe 15 minutes or 20 minutes and I'm only getting started, you know, so it's harder for me to do a shorter set. It's insane that at the start when you're only doing it, you get like 7-10 minutes and you're like, oh, well, I feel that. Whereas now you get to this stage and you're like, that's not enough time for me, you know. It's mostly trying to, but I do try and be professional. Like, I'll not mention who, but I just done All Together Night Festival and the act that was on before me went over his time by 10 minutes. And I
name and shame.
He plays the keyboard.
Okay, right.
But even done 10 minutes, and then I couldn't do that to the act after me. You know, it was just he's took 10 minutes of mine. I'm not taking 10 minutes of the next person. Okay, and so. I don't know. Maybe he got 10 minutes took on him. I don't know. Did it start at the start? But I was just like, so when I came off, and I then went to the festival ones, and I was like, listen, I only get on stage, you know, 10 minutes after my. But I wouldn't do that on, and it was the headliner was on after me, so I was going to respect them, you know. And I was just like, so that's the bit I don't like about the lineups. If people don't keep to their time, or you know, and people only get to see a wee, well, it's maybe good for people to be a wee snippet of you, but I do love having that big 1 hour and a half of yourself on the stage,
of course, because it's split loyalties too, because there are people in that audience are living and dying for Paddy to come on, and then you're showing respect for who's coming behind. I get that. I do get that, but that's your nature that's make that more complicated, because other people probably just don't give one. They wouldn't give an F, right?
Yeah.
And what about comedians? Do you like watching comedy? Do you like, you know, I mean, I think it's, as you said before, variety programs live at the Apollo, it's either panel shows or in the flesh, kind of, really. That seems to be the way we're heading.
I think there's nothing better than watching art live, and whether that be comedy or music or anything. It's great seeing a clip, right? It's great seeing a clip online, and that gives you a wee taster. But there's nothing like being there in front of the person and watching them. Watching comedy for me has changed since now it's my job and I know how it works and the way things is. So I find myself not enjoying it as much as I did when I was just an ordinary punter watching it, because you're analysing things and you're thinking about the what way they're setting things up, and you're not just sitting relaxing. Now, a couple of weeks ago, I'd done the Paddy Power and the wife came down with me and I says, right, we're going as punters. We're going to go and we're going to sit and we're going to watch a couple of acts. And I brought her in and we just sat and enjoyed it. And it was great to do that, because they don't get to do that all the time. Sometimes you're at the back of the stage watching from the side stage and people's talking to you. Whereas at the Paddy Power, after I'd done, I had the night off and we could just go and we'll sit and watch like Neil Delamere, who's absolutely fantastic. Absolutely. Yeah, go and see the man live, because he's just phenomenal. And Mick Rice is another one that I haven't got to see live for until this year, and he's a great act. So you know, and I'm very lucky to get to play with like John Cleary, who to me is like the Christy Moore of Irish comedy. He's just this comedian that's been about for so long, and you just sit and watch John, and it's just different. And I think Ireland has a variety of acts that are just unbelievable. And we're all different in our own wee way. My favourite comedian now of all time and who I've been lucky enough to work with and who asked me to support him a couple of years ago by phoning me and going, would you mind supporting me? And I'm like, are you joking? Like, because he knows I've publicly, he's called Tom State, he's a Canadian act. And he's been on Left Apollo, he's been on all them game shows, and this guy is just, he just tickles my bones. It's just, but he's like rock and roll of comedy. He's just so cool on the stage, you know, he's just his presence and how he goes about his job. And it just makes me laugh out loud. And then you have like Gary Delaney, who's a one-liner comedian from England. And no matter what he says, I just laugh at. It's just, and I've never seen Gary live. I've never worked with him. But I just watch him from afar, and he's just fantastic.
He does my plant in because he's so bloody clever. You know, and you watch 30 seconds of him and he's banged out seven fantastic jokes and you can't remember one. And yeah, it's so annoying.
It's effortless, you know, for me.
And there's a couple of one-liner acts and they're their own style, but you can't just say them either. It's how you deliver them, and it's the pauses and it's the deadpan looks and it's the side eyes and all that type of stuff. Did you ever do, because you know when you mentioned earlier on about you did your show when there were 40 people out there, and you can't help but notice, you know, younger and not so young comedians playing to empty back rooms on the fringe of Edinburgh. And you think, you know, God, how do you get through that? It must be so demoralizing. Or maybe eight people will come in and they say, I had a fantastic gig and there were eight people there. And I don't know if that's the way to do it, or if they're maybe, it's more damaging to the careers, I don't know. But you kind of jumped past that, and maybe COVID was in there, or did you ever do The Fringe?
Listen, I done The Fringe where I went over and just, I didn't like do my own show. I was on compilations and give it a wee taster. And then when I eventually did go over and do my own show, I was very lucky because I had just started to get a name for myself.
Yeah, yeah.
I sold out the whole run. But what I didn't like about the Edinburgh Fringe was they basically wanted money from me. And I'm like, how can we sell out, you know, a whole run and then you still want money from me? And it sort of made me not want to do the Fringe again, because I do have young kids and I have a family and it's my career. And you're sort of going, what, it's like, is this like come here for a month and just put on all this show and all this effort? And it's just like, you're not expected to get anything from it. And so I do feel for young ones going to do it. But the only thing I'll say to them is every one of those gigs, no matter how big, how small it is that you do, if it's an audience of two or one, even do it just to experience it. Because if you've experienced it, then doing it again is not going to be hard because you know how to work it. And it even happens at this point in my career. We had a show in Bristol. I was doing like a tour of England and Scotland, and we had sold like 127 tickets. But when I got to Bristol, it turned out to be the sunniest day of the year. It was like March time, and it was a real warm day that came out of the blue. And obviously, a lot of the people that bought tickets in Bristol were students. And they decided, well, do you know what? I'm not going into a dark. It was like a tunnel-y nightclub, a venue that we were playing. And they were like, we're not going to go. And when I got, the promoter was like, I know for a fact the students have been out all day. They're not going to turn up here. Or if they do, they're going to be too drunk to get in. And I ended up, there was eight people came to the show. And the guy came in to me and he's like, there's eight people there. What do you want me to do? And I went, we're doing the show. And he was like, in that big room. And I went, no, bring them into the green room. It's big enough. Tell them to bring their chairs with them. And I've never really heard anybody like from it. I thought I would have heard more from it. But I'd done that show to eight people and it was four couples. And four of them had seen me live in Ireland and they were Irish. And the other ones, these were their husbands or their wives that they said they were bringing to see me. And they got the most intimate show that I've ever done in my life.
When was that, Paddy?
That was April last year.
Unbelievable.
And it was amazing. I loved it. It was probably one of my favourite shows of last year because it was so intimate.
Yeah.
And I just stood up and done it with them. And no, I knew them all by first name by the end of the show. And, you know, we all hugged and then that was it done. And there was one of the girls was like, I literally go home and me and my sister go and see you in an arena. And I can't believe I'm sitting in this tiny room and you're doing a private show for us, you know. But wee things like that, I love that because it's a story I can tell. You know, it's just.
Of course it is. It's one other thing just about performing abroad, just before we wrap it up, Paddy. The one thing I've noticed through my work in radio is that, you know, if you go to certain parts of the world, wherever it is, I feel you sort of get a sense of what Irish community used to be like, because everyone's so reliant on each other over there. They're so delighted to be around other people that are like-minded, and it's old school, like, I'll help you and I'll help that. And I can only imagine when someone like yourself lands and it's like, this is our Paddy here, you know what I mean? That those gigs must just be unbelievable. Or maybe I'm misreading it, but I can only, because they're so appreciative and they're so glad to see a bit of Ireland in where they are now. What's it like?
It's exactly the way you sort of described it. It's, I think when I went to Australia for the first time, I got that experience because it seemed so far away. You know, Australia, I remember when I was thinking about going, I was like, this is so far away. It's actually not that far away. it's literally, I mean, I got a plane from Belfast to London, from London straight to Perth. And within 22 hours, I was in the other side of the world, and I felt great, and I was just like, this is amazing, this beautiful place. But the Irish there were just like, oh my god, thank god you're here, you know. It's just, and you're right, it is that sense of home. And the maddest one was when we'd done Sydney, and it was a comedy club, it was about a 300 seater, and they were like, we've sold out here very quick, and we're gonna do, we can't get to you the next night. I says, I can't do the next night anyway. And they were like, what about doing a late and an early? And I was like, let's do that. So we put on an early show, and the early show, I think the doors were at 5 and the show was at 6, and then everybody had to be out of the room by 8, sort of thing. And when I arrived at the venue at about 5 o'clock, the guy in the comedy club went, they've been here from 2 o'clock.
Oh wow.
And we have run out of alcohol twice.
Why does that make me proud?
I know, it's an insane thing. And then, so as I was about to go on, like, you can imagine what they were like. They were cheering, and the guy was going, we don't have anything like this. Like, this is like a football match. And I'm like, yeah, we'll be grand. And he went, no, what I'm worried about, Paddy, is the time scale in between your show and the next one. And I was like, right. He says, because they're going to want to go back in and drink more alcohol, but then the new crowd's going to be out in that waiting area, which is the bar to come in here. So we need to get them ones out. And I went, look, at the end of the show, I'll announce, like, the paid paper, if you get me a set of stairs to take everybody out, like a fire exit, and I'll take them out, and I'll do photographs for a half an hour while you clean the room and then get the other ones in. And I done that. And the guy was like, it was unbelievable. He says, like, you literally directed them down the staircase, and you all stood down there. And then I shut the door, came back up the stairs, went on stage, and brilliant, done the second show. And it was just one of them moments where I was like, do you know what? That was a great thing, because yeah, everybody wanted a wee piece of it. It was just a great show. We were on the other side of the world. And then when I came home, everybody was like, did the Australians get you? And I was like, I couldn't tell you, because there wasn't that many. And like, it was, everybody was Irish that was at the shows, you know. And now, the second time we went, there was a lot of Australians in, and that, you know, one or two had been, and then brought more people, and it was great. But I just, as like I say, half the world's Irish and the other half's jealous. And the only problem I think we have in this country is that if everybody at one stage decided to come home, I think we'd sink, because there's just so many of us and we're everywhere, you know. Yeah. But no matter where you go, I'm away to America next week, and I like going to a place, and I like doing city, home. You know, I like just getting it done and coming home. And it's insane, because you go to these cities and everybody wants a piece of you, and you're only there for one night, and then you do it the next night, and then you come home and you're like, I really need a holiday after that, you know, because it's just party central. But we're all over the world, we're just great people, and we're just up for the crack, and it's good to go around the world and to see
you. And you know, you know, obviously I've interviewed quite a few people over the years. The one thing that feels great chatting to you, Paddy, is you're so present in all of these experiences that, you know, sometimes you talk to people and they've had an amazing thing happen, but it's almost like they weren't there, if you know what I mean. But you seem to, whether it's the 8-person gig or pulling off that amazing double in Australia, like, you were there and have taken the experience with you. And I think that's fantastic.
And I think that's just the way I see life, you know. I think it's like, even sitting in the hospital the other night, and there was a a guy came in, he was Algerian, and they couldn't understand him, and he'd obviously had something happen to his head. There was blood pouring from him, and they eventually got him sorted. And I mean, A&E had 200 people sitting in it, and he, out of everyone, spotted me and came straight over to me and then started messing about with me and grabbed my leg. And people were laughing, like, because they were going, he has no idea who Paddy is. But if it's going to happen, it happens to me. You know, it's just one, I'm just one of them people where it gravitates towards me and the situations and everything that happens. And the only way I look at it is you embrace it and just try and get through it. And as long as it doesn't hurt you, you'll be all right, and you can tell the tale, you know.
Okay, if you listen to this close to when it was first broadcast, Paddy McDonald's performing in Letterkenny on Saturday, September 12th in On Green On Theatre at 8 p.m. He's also in October 26th at the Bala Arts Centre in Bala Buffet. That's the 16th, sorry. And the Abbey Arts Centre down in Ballyshannon too on the 10th. And you can book tickets directly through the On Green On Theatre box office or via his official website for the other gigs. And a quick word just about the show, Paddy, what people can look forward to.
Just a normal Paddy McDonald, full on crowd work, drawing people in, being Irish, being a daddy, and all those things.
Listen, thank you so much for all of your time. We really do appreciate it. And continued success in the career.